This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour open-line talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. To express your viewpoint, please call 804-754-1988. That's 804-754-1988. And now, with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against His anointed. Welcome to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. Today we're going to take a very unusual look at a phrase that to you may seem very, very strange, but is totally comprehensible and understood by most Jewish people around the world. We're going to open that phrase up in a few moments, but before we do that, we see from the book of Psalms, chapter 2, that there is something about the nations that are raging against Israel. The scriptures make it very plain that Israel is God's anointed, was God's anointed, and is God's anointed. Isaiah stated that very, very clearly. And because of that, Israel being God's anointed, you can well understand then why Satan, the arch enemy of God, rebellious from the heavens itself, would have something against God's plan and purpose with regard to Israel. If God calls Israel to a specific plan and purpose, then Satan would automatically set himself against it. You may recall that through Adam's sin, he actually committed treason against the kingdom of God and caused all peoples to be subjected to Satan and his wiles, his deceptive wiles, including the nations that ultimately came from Adam and then from Noah after the flood. The nations subjected to Satan. Satan is called the prince of the power of the air, who works in the children of disobedience. He is at odds, seeking to exalt himself against the creator of the universe. But he can't do it by himself. Just as God has given power to men to live out his truth in the earth, even so, Satan himself cannot operate without people. He needs people to do his deceptive work in the earth. And so there is a competition that's been going on for time immemorial. You could call it the cosmic conflict taking place, or certainly here on earth, as God and His Spirit seek to move among men to bring them to voluntarily submit their wills to His Word, His will, and His ways. At the same time, Satan works among men to seek to turn them against God, His Word, His will, and His ways. And so he'll find every conceivable way to do that. Now, if indeed God made a covenant with Abraham and extended that covenant through Isaac and Jacob, which He did, then we would know that Satan would want to do something to preempt that covenant, because God said that it was through Abraham that all the families of the earth would be blessed, through Abraham and his son of promise, Isaac. That being the case, Satan would want to do everything he could to upset that commitment. If he could destroy, if he could upset, if he could render meaningless that covenant to Abraham, such that it could not be fulfilled, then he would have won. He, through deception, would have turned the peoples of the earth, indeed the nations of the earth, against God and against His anointed. Now, one of the problems, though, is that even within the anointed itself, Israel, the apple of God's eye, many, in fact most, turned against Him. They rebelled against Him. And so, just as Moses had prophesied in Deuteronomy chapter 28 and in other places in the Torah, the first five books of the Old Testament, just as he had prophesied, God would expunge them from the land because of their continuous rebellion against Him. Well, that put at risk the very promise that God had made through Abraham. God knew that. On the other hand, God prepared a way. It involved a remnant. God's way always involves a remnant. That's a very small, seemingly inconsequential part of the whole that people don't give much credit to, but God gives a lot of credit to. And so God envisioned a remnant, a small remnant, both of Israel and of the Gentile nations, who would ultimately make the choice to submit to His word, His will, and His ways, and through that remnant would fulfill His covenant to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Well, you can well see then that there is this tremendous battle that is intensifying now, even as we speak. Because as the psalmist said in Psalm 2, why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? That's a question that needs to be asked. And so today we're going to attempt to answer that question, and it has to do with a phrase, a pair of words, that are used within the Hebrew context and are understood by Jews around the world. It's the phrase Tikkun Olam. Tikkun Olam, it's spelled T-I-K-K-U-N, new word O-L-A-M. Tikkun Olam. And it's a Hebrew phrase that means repairing the world. So in Judaism, the concept of Tikkun Olam originated in the early rabbinic period. The concept was given new meanings in the Kabbalah of the medieval period and even further connotations in modern Judaism. But I believe that the ultimate meaning of Tikkun Olam did not arise out of the rabbinic period at all. It arose out of God's call and covenant to Abraham. And so we're going to look at that here today on Viewpoint and see why the heathen or the nations are raging and the people are imagining a vain thing. Why a new world order and a new world government is rising dramatically, even as we speak, and why it is setting itself, every nation in the earth is setting itself against Israel. Now we're going to unfold in remaining part of this hour some of the developments that have taken place just in the last week or so, and then we'll go back and pick up the history and prophecy and see where this will lead. I believe this provides hope to Israel and hope to the Jewish people, but only if they return to submit themselves fully, as the prophets called, to the Lord God, His word, His will, and His ways. So stay tuned. I want to urge you to get a copy of our Jewish calendar. Your gift, it's a $13 calendar. We're making it available now until Christmas time for your gift of $10 or more to Save America Ministries, $5 postage and handling. If you want to get multiple copies, that's fine. The postage will be much, much less. Call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Get them immediately so we can get them out to you for gifts and so on. 1-800-SAVE-USA. We'll be right back.
They are here. The end times are upon us. The prophesied last days are exploding in our world. Our TV screens almost scream, Jesus is coming. The birth pangs flash before our eyes. Jesus called these the beginning of sorrows. But what was it that dominated Jesus' concern about the end of the age? It was deception. Jesus' words to his disciples just before his crucifixion were chilling. He said, take heed that no man deceive you, and these words echo through the centuries to us. Paul called them perilous times. He warned that seducers would wax worse and worse. So how can we escape the seduction of the saints? Chuck Chrismeyer answers that question in his powerful new book, Seduction of the Saints. Order your copy of Seduction of the Saints for your gift of $18 to Save America Ministries. Call 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Seduction of the Saints will grip your attention. attention from page 1. Call 1-800-SAVE-USA. Call 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. You will not be disappointed. Call 1-800-SAVE-USA today.
Something is terribly wrong with the U.S. economy, and most of us want to prepare and protect what we've worked so hard for. But it's confusing, and you don't know where to turn. Seems like every channel has another high-priced advertisement selling gold. But who do you trust, and what do you buy? There is an answer to those high-pressured coin jockeys on TV. FAMC has been in the precious metals business for over a quarter century, but they're much more than coin dealers. FAMC has been the leader in financial forecasting and storm-proofing their clients from the economic storms we see today. Whether you're trying to protect your money, retirement funds, IRAs, business funds, or trusts, FAMC has the expertise to help you navigate these uncertain waters we're in and give you the peace of mind in purchasing the precious metals. Call FAMC today for a free economic package and storm-proofing your assets brochure. 800-325-0919. Deal with proven professionals today. Call 800-325-0919. 800-325-0919.
Today we explore why the Jewish people adopting the concept of tikkun olam may actually be setting up themselves, just as the psalmist in Psalm 2 has said, for the nations to rise up against them as the anointed, the kings of the earth setting themselves and the rulers taking counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. But the response will be that he that sits in the heavens shall laugh. He shall have them in derision. And then the Lord in heaven will speak unto them, that is the nations, in his wrath, and vex them in his sore displeasure, saying, yet have I set my king upon my holy hill of Zion, and declaring, thou art my son, this day have I begotten thee. Well, who is that son? Well, that son is referring prophetically to the Messiah, the same son that Isaiah the prophet referred to in Isaiah 9, 6 and 7, for unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder. God imparted to man in the earth the earth's government. But when Adam committed treason against the government of God through Satan's deception of Eve. Remember, Adam was not deceived, only Eve. Adam went along to get along, but he defied God in doing it and aligned himself with Satan's dominance in the earth, and therefore turned over dominion to Satan in the earth. Mankind, therefore, became a partner with Satan to govern the earth. This is why there has been such pain, such agony, such breakdown through the fall of man submitting himself to Satan's authority. But God himself needed to reestablish authority in the earth, and he had said through the psalmist again in Psalm 8 that he had given that responsibility to man. What is man that thou art mindful of him, or the son of man that you visit him? For you have made him to have dominion over the works of your hands, and have put all things under his, that is, man's feet. Therefore, it was necessary in God's eternal plan to bring again to the earth Adam. Not the Adam married to Eve, but the second and last Adam, the son referred to in Psalm 2, the son or the child referred to in Isaiah chapter 9, verses 6 and 7. He said, you are my son, this day have I begotten you. He said, I'm going to give the nations to you, that is the son, for your inheritance, and the uttermost parts of the earth for your possession. And you shall break them with a rod of iron, and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Now, if you have ever heard Handel's Messiah, you know that these passages from Psalm 2 are sung every single year, usually about this time of year. Because this is the time when most people are remembering and celebrating the coming of the Messiah, Yeshua, the child that was born. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and that government shall be upon his shoulders, you see. So God says in Psalm 2, puts it in a different way, I'm going to give him the nations for his inheritance, and the uttermost parts of the earth for his possession. In other words, he's going to govern. In fact, it says he's going to rule them with a rod of iron, and dash in pieces those that are opposed to his ultimate government. But for now, you see, he wants us to voluntarily submit to the government, not just of God in the abstract, but of his Son in particular. Because it's through the Son who was given as the last Adam to bring redemption, or ultimate tikkun olam, so to speak, to the earth, that we have hope. Now, here's what happened. And we need to understand this, and I must tell you that in just the last several days, I really believe that the Spirit of God has given some special understanding to me as to how all of this comes together. That can be such a help to both Jew and Gentile to understand why there might be historically a struggle between us in understanding, but there need not be. Because what I'm going to share with you, and have already been sharing with you here, brings to fullness the covenant that was made through Abraham, extended to Isaac, and reaffirmed in Jacob. It was an everlasting covenant. It had two parts, one having to do with the land, we see that under dispute, and one having to do with the fact that through the physical seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob would all the earth be blessed, all the families of the earth be blessed. That would be tikkun olam, wouldn't it? That would be repairing the world. If all the families of the earth were blessed, the world would be repaired, wouldn't it? But they can't be repaired, and they cannot be blessed as long as mankind is under the dominion of God's arch enemy, who is the ruler of the prince of the power of the air and works in the children of disobedience. Therefore, our only hope, and God knew this, he prepared a way. Our only hope then is to submit to willingly, voluntarily, submit to the authority, the holiness, the purity of the Son that was sent by the Father, full of grace and truth, with the very character of God, but who was sent as a man, you see, born of a virgin, as Isaiah said he would be, born of a virgin, that he would not be tainted with the bloodline of sinful Adam. Now we begin to see that it's only in Yeshua, only in the Son, that tikkun olam can be achieved. Now, unfortunately, when the Jewish people were taken captive to Babylon, they were sucked in as we in America have been sucked into a Babylonish culture. In fact, recently a rabbi told me that America was Babylon. The whole Western world was Babylon. Interesting. If you're in America, if you're in Canada, if you're in Western Europe, do you see that perhaps we are a kind of Babylon in this age? Well, that was the viewpoint of this rabbi. And if that indeed be true, or if there's even a hint of truth in that, we can understand then how the Jewish people, when they were taken captive to Babylon for 70 years, would have been sucked into the spirit of Babylon. The spirit of Babylon was very much like the spirit of Egypt, the spirit of Tyre, the spirit of Sodom, the spirit of Sidon, the spirit of Gomorrah. And by the way, Russia and the Jordanians are on a full court press, it was just announced this week, to discover Sodom and Gomorrah. That's right. Now, why they're into that, that's a subject of a whole nother broadcast, perhaps. But that's what's happening right now. This week, they're launching on a major campaign to discover Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, they don't have to look to the shores of the Dead Sea to find that. All they have to do is go to San Francisco or Amsterdam or New York or just about any major city on the planet, London, and you will find Sodom and Gomorrah. In fact, this very day, the United States Congress is seeking to overturn the Don't Ask, Don't Tell prohibition that would keep sodomy knowingly out of our military. Israel already gave up that right back in 1993. And now America wants to follow the same thing. How can we bring Tikkun Olam to the world by repudiating the very by embracing, that is, the very thing that God says is an abomination? You see, we can't do that. So what we're trying to do is achieve Tikkun Olam, or repairing the world on man's terms. And that's what happened when the people went to Babylon and they could no longer offer their temple sacrifices. And the rabbis came together, a couple of rabbis came together, and they said, look, this is a better deal. Now we don't have to offer the bulls and goats and the rams and all of that nasty stuff. No, we're going to do good works. And so good works became the means to achieve what God wanted to do by the circumcision of the heart. All the way back to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 10. God never saw circumcision of the flesh as the ultimate goal. That was only a symbol that would unite the Jewish people together as a people. But what he was really after was the circumcision of the heart. That's what Deuteronomy 10 says. Moses warned the people, circumcise therefore the foreskin of your heart and be no more stiff-necked. And then God will allow you into his promised land. But you see, God expunged the people of Israel, his chosen people, the apple of his eye, from the very land he promised them because they repudiated his word, his will, and his ways and did it their own way. Then they developed another alternative, you see, and it was the rabbis who did it. It's called Rabbinic Judaism, and it began in Babylon. And it was a turning on its head of God's original intent. God's original intent was for the heart to be changed, not for an external kind of salvation of the individual or the world through Tikkun Olam, repairing the world through good works, but rather a conversion of the heart, a circumcision of the heart through repentance and through the worship of the one true God, not embracing the ways of the world, the heathen, the goyim, whatever term you want to use, the nations, but rather coming apart and being separate so that God could be a father unto us and we would be his sons and daughters. Rabbi Shaul, known by Christians as the Apostle Paul, said that very thing in 1 Corinthians 6:14. Come ye apart and be ye separate, and I will be a father unto you, and you shall be my sons and daughters. Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers, as the manner of some is. But that's what Israel did. Over and over again, and even to this very day, Israel is yearning to be one with the nations of the earth and to become part of the European Union. And God said, he warned them through the book of Numbers, you will not be reckoned among the nations of the earth. But they think in order to achieve Tikkun Olam, on the rabbi's view of things, having cast aside the call of God to the heart, that somehow it could be accomplished through good works and uniting the world together through good works. But it will never happen. It will bring the greatest catastrophe that the world has ever seen on Israel and the rest of the world. We'll talk about that when we get back.
IRN USA Radio News, I'm Hope Dover. The Senate has passed a sweeping tax package that keeps Americans from seeing a tax hike come January and keeps jobless benefits coming for those out of work.
The yeas are 81, the nays are 19. The motion is agreed to.
And with that, the Senate approves the tax cut measure. The $858 billion package now goes to the House, where many Democrats are unhappy with the provision that allows estates as large as $10 million to pass to heirs tax-free. Democratic leaders, however, say they expect the bill to ultimately pass and become law. Carrie Shoemaker, Washington.
The government is going to court looking to recover billions of dollars from the Gulf of Oil spill. The Justice Department lawsuit names BP Exploration and Production, along with eight other companies. It asks that they be held liable for all removal costs and damage from the oil spill. This is IRN USA Radio News.
Is the IRS ruining your life? Are you afraid of losing everything? You can end the despair you feel right now. Get ready to write down an important phone number you're going to need to help solve your IRS nightmare. The number is 800-584-1095.
Hello, I'm John Harris, president of J.K. Harris & Company, the nation's largest tax representation firm. IRS problems have a way of ruining every aspect of your life if you let them. They don't go away on their own. The IRS can attach your wages, your pension, your savings, even your Social Security check. Over the past decade, the tax team at J.K. Harris has successfully negotiated settlements for our clients, saving them millions of dollars.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, call J.K. Harris at 800-584-1095. You may qualify to dramatically reduce your tax debt. Call 800-584-1095. That's 800-584-1095.
With an IRN USA Business News Update, I'm Hope Duggar. Danone Incorporated has agreed to pay $21 million and drop some health claims from its Activia yogurt and Dan Active dairy drink under pressure from state and federal regulators. The food company has claimed in its marketing that Activia yogurt helps relieve irregularity and that its Dan Active drink helps people avoid catching colds or the flu. The Federal Trade Commission said Wednesday there is not enough evidence to back those claims. It says it's reached a settlement with the company that prohibits it from making such claims unless they are approved by the FDA. Irish lawmakers have voted to support the $90 billion international bailout fund for Ireland, an emergency measure designed to keep Europe's debt crisis from getting worse. The country's prime minister argued that Ireland had no choice but to take loans from the European Union and the International Monetary Fund at interest rates averaging 5.8% because borrowing from bond investors would cost much more. With an IRN USA Business News Update, I'm Hope Duggar.
Tikkun Olam and the reason why the nations are raging and imagining a vain and foolish thing against God and against His anointed. Today on Viewpoint, we are unfolding the eternal purposes of God and why it is that things are happening the way they are and have happened the way they have, and set in motion one of the most explosive developments, well, the most explosive development in the history of mankind, called a new world order or a new world government. This new world order and this new world government that the world is intent on engaging in is intended to replace the rule and reign of the Messiah. It is intended to replace the rule and reign of the ultimate anointed one, the Messiah, the Mashiach, the Holy One of Israel, that Gentiles refer to as Christ or Jesus Christ, and the Jews refer to as Yeshua, as only an important rabbi. But this is what is about to happen. And Satan is intent on destroying, undermining the covenant that God made with Abraham, that in and through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob would all the nations of the earth be blessed to fulfill God's holy plan and His holy purpose through a holy man and his sons, Abraham, who obeyed God and God or believed God, and God imputed it to him for righteousness. But that no longer became important, you see, after the Babylonian captivity, because you could say Israel was Babylonianized. Later, when Israel was released from Babylon and many returned to Israel, they were Hellenized. And that is the term that most frequently is used, the Hellenization of the Jews. And there were actually struggles in the time leading up to Yeshua's birth that the Hellenization of Israel was at its peak. And within the rabbinical rules, the orders themselves, there were those who actually were preaching and advocating a doctrine of Hellenism rather than of a biblical allegiance to the one true God. It was a very confused situation, and just as there are tremendous forces in America today through red and blue states and liberal and conservative and so on, those forces existed within the religious community in Israel in that day, and now they exist again. We have, just as in the Christian community, there are a whole variety of different, you could say, almost belief systems, there are a whole variety of belief systems even within the Jewish people and Israel. But there's one thing that seems to be an overarching concept or idea that most Jewish people and their rabbis understand, or at least have an application to, and that is the term Tikkun Olam, T-I-K-K-U-N-O-L-A-M. That expression is used in the extra-biblical writing called Mishnah, which means, it's a longer phrase that's used in the Mishnah, which means for the sake of tikkun of the world, and it indicates a practice that should be followed, not because it is repaired by or required by biblical law, but because it will help to avoid social chaos. So you could say, in a way, that tikkun olam is the social gospel of the Jewish people. The social gospel of the Jewish people. And its ultimate implication is that through doing good works or mitzvot, that somehow you can really save yourself and the whole world, as the people, and particularly the Jewish people, set the tone for these good works. Well, the scriptures do call us. In fact, they say that we should perform good works. James, the brother of Jesus, said that we should perform good works, that men may see our good works. Or Jesus said it, actually. Yeshua said that we should do good works, that men would glorify God, which was in heaven. But the real purpose, the real focus of Tikkun Olam is not on glorifying God. It's on elevating men into a kind of, you could say, earthbound salvation. So among the Jewish people, there is a very vague concept of salvation itself. And it really is almost always connected with saving the world, or tikkun olam. The phrase tikkun olam is included in the Aleinu, a Jewish prayer that is traditionally recited three times daily. The Aleinu praises God for allowing the Jewish people to serve God and expresses hope that the whole world will one day recognize God and abandon their idolatry. Well, that's good. But that's not where the real focus ends up. The real focus ends up as the rabbis there in Babylon refocus the whole concept of sin and salvation into doing mitzvah or good works. So the phrase tikkun olam is used in this longer expression now in the Mishnah to perfect the world under God's sovereignty. In other words, when all the people of the world abandon false gods and recognize God, the world will have been perfected. But the means to accomplish that, you see, is not through Yeshua, because Yeshua has been rejected. And so there has to be an alternative. And the rabbis back at the time of Babylon established an alternative that has been embraced by the majority of the Jewish people ever since. And that is this concept of good works, doing the mitzvot. In Jewish thought, there are two kinds. There's ethical mitzvot as well as ritual mitzvot. Important to the process of tikkun olam, some Jews believe that performing mitzvot will create a model society among the Jewish people, which will in turn influence the rest of the world. Now, that brings us to, again, my focus with regard to understanding how all of this connects with the rising one world government. Because, you see, the Jewish people see this as influencing the rest of the world by doing good works. Well, the Gentile nations see somewhat the same thing. But they're not connected to the sovereignty of God at all. No, it is connected to the sovereignty of man. In fact, if you follow those that are truly promoting at its roots, and behind the scenes, the global government, the one world order, you will find that they are God deniers. They're God haters. They're not God lovers. They don't believe in the sovereignty of God. They believe in the ultimate sovereignty of man. In fact, they want to strip away the sovereignty of the nations that God ordered Noah to establish and to, in fact, abandon the sovereignty of nations to bring them all together under a one world government. This is how they envision a counterfeit or alternative to tikkun olam. It will be accomplished through a global government. Now, this is a utopian view. The Jewish people have somewhat of a utopian view through tikkun olam because it's been disconnected from the Messiah. Now, yes, indeed, throughout all of Israel, even in secular Israel today, there is a messianic expectation. But there's a messianic expectation among the goyim, the Gentiles throughout the world. Even secular people, even New Agers, there's a messianic expectation everywhere. But what does it really mean? You see, and so the call, from God's viewpoint, as expressed among the prophets, was that was to be found in the Messiah who was to come as a babe and be raised up in the holiness and righteousness of God without sin, so that he then could take upon himself the sin of the world. That's what Isaiah 53 was all about. And Handel's Messiah brings so many of these passages together, seemingly obscure passages. And since the 1700s, when Handel was inspired with that music, he has echoed the call of God to the ultimate salvation of the world, beginning with the Jewish people, and then including the Gentiles who would be grafted in, so that indeed there could be tikkun olam from God's viewpoint. We'll be back.
Water is precious. In fact, you can live without food for a long time, but you can't live without water. Clean water. But what if clean water suddenly becomes unavailable? What do you do if a natural disaster or terrorist attack strikes? What if purification and pumping stations don't operate? Then what? That's where the big Berkey purification system comes in, and we've used them in our extended family for years. The Berkey's long been recognized as the ultimate in water purification. It requires no power, works on gravity feed, and is super simple to use. And it's beautiful to sit on your counter in polished stainless steel. But best of all, it removes harmful chemicals and bacteria without removing healthful minerals. It's the perfect solution with even better purifying elements than ever before. So get your big Berkey today. Call 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Your gift of $339 will put this state-of-the-art purifier in your home. Call 1-800-SAVE-USA today. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA.
According to Javelin Research, every 3 seconds, another identity is stolen. This year, nearly 10 million people will have their identities, credit cards, and bank account numbers stolen. Some think credit monitoring alone is enough, but that won't help stop identity theft or help you repair the damage. LifeLock does both. LifeLock monitors over 10,000 black market websites for your information. They request free annual credit reports and request your name be removed from pre-approved credit card offers. And if you become a victim of identity theft while a member of LifeLock because of a failure in their service, they'll help you fix it. Up to $1 million. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Why risk suffering the cost of identity theft when the cost to help protect it is so low? The call takes just minutes. Call now and mention Radio 10 for 10% off. That's like 1 month free. Call 1-800-308-4983. 1-800-308-4983. That's 1-800-308-4983.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint. We're dealing with a very, very critical subject here today. Perhaps you may have never heard about it. The words Tikkun Olam, T-I-K-K-U-N, new word O-L-A-M, which basically means to reconcile or restore the earth or the world. And we find that expression, for instance, environmentalists. Are attempting to utilize that concept in order to carry on their agendas. But most of the environmental movement has nothing to do with restoring God's sovereignty or authority in the earth. In fact, it's defying God's authority and sovereignty in the earth. And so these things can become very, very deceptive. And as you know, I have written a book called Seduction of the Saints, How to Stay Pure in a World of Deception. And we talk about how people become deceived through what things, they seem to be good on their surface. They seem to have value and that they should be embraced. But the reality is, it's like a snake, like a rattlesnake lurking in the bushes. And you do not realize when you're walking down this beautiful path that he's ready, pounce there, ready to attack you and to deliver a, not a deceptive bite, but a destructive bite to you. And unfortunately, Israel and the Jewish people have been bitten unwittingly by a very dangerous bite of the viper, the serpent, from time immemorial, and do not realize it. And it's painful. It's painful to see what is happening to Israel and how Israel, there's such a desire, you see, to see the nation come together and to see it fulfill its rightful place in the earth. But the reality is it can't happen because the most fundamental thing for it to happen is rejected. To obtain and experience the Tikkun Olam that has been yearned for, that Israel would display God's glory in the earth, the very person that God sent to the earth, full of grace and truth, to display that glory, has been rejected. And so, no matter how hard Israel tries, no matter how hard her prime ministers try, they can't bring it together. Because the nations of the earth are rising up continuously and egregiously with violence against her. And they are motivated by the prince of the power of the air who works in the children of disobedience. They are motivated by the serpent himself. And so the question is asked in Psalm 2, why do the heathen or the nations rage and the people imagine a vain thing? The kings or the leaders of the earth set themselves and their rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed. Again, his anointed is the physical seed of Abraham. Now, for those Gentiles who have submitted and received the gift of life through the only son of Israel who ever truly obeyed God, and that is Yeshua, he was the firstborn of Israel. The only one, the firstborn from the dead and the firstborn of Israel, the only one who ever obeyed God, and it's through his gift, you see, on that cross, just outside of Israel, outside of Jerusalem, that the whole world had an opportunity, beginning with the Jew, to experience tikkun olam, starting in one's own heart, and then moving out from there. It's been a confusing thing ever since because there has been such a desire to fulfill that purpose through good works. Now, good works should reveal the work of Yeshua's cleansing in our hearts. It should reveal the circumcision of the heart that has already been accomplished. But it doesn't replace it. It needs to be there, but it doesn't replace it. You can't bootstrap tikkun olam. It is a matter of the heart. But Jews believe that performing mitzvot will create a model society among the Jewish people, which will in turn influence the rest of the world. Sometimes it's attributed to biblical verses that describe the Jews as a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Well, indeed, they were called to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation, but they rejected both terms. Priests represent the people to God, and a holy nation is one that is separated unto God, not separated from the world only, but separated unto God. But you cannot, for instance, embrace that which God says he hates, such as homosexuality, and do it openly and notoriously in your own military, as Israel did in 1993, and expect yourself to become a light to the nations. What Israel is trying to do is display themselves as a democratic light to the nation, not a biblical light to the nation. They want to be seen as modeling a enlightened kind of democratic European concept of enlightenment to the world. But that's not what God called them to be. God called them to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation, a light to the nations, and, quite frankly, those same terms are used to apply to Gentile followers of Yeshua, Jesus, who embrace him and his salvation and will become a light to the Gentile world. And our only hope, as Rabbi Shaul, that is, the Apostle Paul, described, our only hope, it's set forth in Romans chapter 11, is to be grafted in to Israel's hope. That's the only way the world will ever see tikkun olam. If both Jew and Gentile who will follow God's covenant to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and obey his voice and receive the salvation of Yeshua, who was sent of the Father full of grace and truth as the last Adam to and as the firstborn of Israel to bring the world, to unite the world in himself, so that all men could be saved if indeed they would look upon him and receive him. And as many as would receive him, to them he gives authority to become the sons of God, even to as many as believe on his name. Now, in modern Orthodox philosophy, which is often intertwined with religious Zionism, especially in America, it's commonly believed that mitzvot, or these good works, have practical this-worldly sociological and educational effects on those who perform them. And in that manner, the mitzvot will perfect the Jews and the world. Now you understand why The Apostle Paul rose up against works. You see, he was not talking about obeying God. That's not what the works that he was talking about. He was talking about the rabbinical works, that mitzvot, that were raised up as an alternative to the works that would flow from a life of righteousness. Not to replace the life of righteousness. But Gentiles have totally blown it, totally blown the understanding, and have twisted the words of the Apostle Paul, just as the Apostle Peter said. He said, many reading the words of the Apostle Paul wrest them to their own destruction, because they don't understand the Hebrew background of the situation. Now, let me shift from there and bring us back to the one world government alternative. You see, that is what we're facing. That is what Israel is facing, and why the nations have set themselves and the rulers are taking counsel against the Lord and against Israel. And as we speak, I have a whole raft of articles in front of me. The EU waiting until appropriate to recognize a Palestinian state. Despite fresh U.S. approach, Palestinians say no Mideast talks without a settlement freeze. Then Shimon Peres, the president of Israel, who is a radical secularist, I think he kept the Sabbath one time, one day in his whole life. And he did it under duress. He said, we're running out of time for peace. What does that mean to him? It means that Israel has to submit to the two-state solution and buy into the idea that if Israel just submits to the democratic ways of the world and everything that the Gentile nations want, that then they will become one with the rest of the world and will be able to have Tikkun Olam. It'll never happen. Hamas came out just this week and said Hamas will never recognize Israel. And the reality, my friends, is the world doesn't have much love lost for Israel. They only love themselves. They only want to take advantage of Israel for their own purposes. Now, ultimately, the nations of the earth, and particularly the larger nations and movements, want to have dominion over the Temple Mount. And they want to rule and reign from Mount Zion. The Pope, the Vatican, wants to rule and reign from Mount Zion. Now, the Pope is called the Vicar of Christ. In Roman Catholic terminology, that means he stands in the place of Christ. Really. God, in Psalm chapter 2, says he will set his king upon his holy hill. His son, this day have I begotten you. Is that the Pope? No. But the Pope wants to rule and reign, you see, from Mount Zion. The deal is that the nations, including the religious forces of our world, Islam, the Pope through the Vatican, and even Russia, the EU, all of them want to set themselves against Israel and form some kind of utopian government that will form the ultimate Tikkun Olam for the world. Friends, what the prophets tell us is it will bring the world's greatest destruction and will bring great judgment upon Israel as they submit to this global government until the Prince of Peace, until the Son comes and rules and reigns on Mount Zion, and they look upon him whom they have pierced and weep for him as for their only son. Let's pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Friends, we're in an ultimate moment. This is the moment that all history has prepared us for. We're preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. God bless you. Be a blessing. And let's obtain God's Tikkun Olam.
You're listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home. We'll be right back.
views expressed on this program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of the Information Radio Network, its affiliates, stations, or advertisers.